Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Welcome back to Right on Four Corners. I'm your host, Delcherie Gladden. I'm a USA Today bestselling author of over 30 published novels and a ninth grade English teacher. And on this episode, I have Scott Archer Jones, and he's going to be talking about his novel, And Throw Away the Skins. Scott, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for having me on, especially for a 2019 book. It is one that won the SIPA Award out of Colorado for Best Women's Writing. And the truth is that I wasn't there to accept the award. I think I was in a roundabout in Scotland, terrifying myself at the time. I've been writing for about 15 years. I've been authoring for about 10. Before that, I spent 30 years as a tech person who moved into people and projects. And what I think very few authors recognize is that work environment provides a very high stress place where people reveal themselves. And I think that reinforced my desire as a reader to start writing about these people. My wife and I have an insatiable reading habit. We got a chance to move to the Netherlands for 3 years. And when we went, we took what we thought were a few books that we just had to have, plus the unread ones. So we went away with 700 books. And 3 years later, we had to move back with 800 books. So my idea of depopulating while we were over there didn't work out at all.
That's a hard thing to do with books.
Yeah, my side gig is that I've been heavily involved since we returned to the United States with the Shooter Library of Angel Fire. And it's basically, I've got a very soft spot in my heart. We're a charity, 501c3. We get certain grants, like from the state librarian, but basically we raise all of our own money to keep the shop open. So if any of your listeners want to send a check to Angel Fire, we'll gladly take it.
Oh, that's great to know. We'll have to dig into that in a little bit more because I'd like to know more about that work. That sounds really interesting. But before we get too far into it, talking about And Throw Away the Skins, as you mentioned, this was published in 2019. And yeah. Give readers just an overview of the story, and then we'll jump into some more specific questions and discussion after that.
Okay. It really addresses two themes I am highly interested in. One is what war does to families. And so my protagonist is a woman who's in trouble medically. She's married to a minister who's found his calling as a chaplain in the military, and he's gone to Afghanistan. And she has to suffer through medical procedures. She has to lose her marriage. And then she finally loses her ex-husband in the book in trying to cope with what the wars do to our people. I'm very interested in this because my experience with people who have served goes all the way back to the Vietnam War. So I've been seeing it generation after generation. The other thing that I was very, very interested in was what happens to the people who come back from the war when they're no longer in the uniform, and what coping mechanisms do they contend with, do they use, or what kind of services do they get from the VA? So there's a fair amount of research that went into that, and there's actually a veterans center that appears in the book. The major plot line of the book says that she loses the gilded life of a large church in Dallas when her husband deploys and goes on to a lieutenant salary. And so she moves to a family cabin in northern New Mexico so I can get the luminescent light of New Mexico into the book. And from there, it's trial and error, setbacks, and it's friendships. It's a very interesting book that took a lot of research. For instance, I spent a day with the commandant of the Veterans Cemetery in Santa Fe. Highly, highly informative, but I needed to know exactly how to handle a military funeral. And as a net result, I also got a tremendous history lesson on how the cemetery worked. And that's just one example of how you have to reach out to people where you don't have firsthand experience.
Absolutely. That's such an important factor in really doing justice to any story, really. You know, that may be technical details or process like you were working through with different aspects of the military that not everybody's going to be familiar with. But, you know, even down to small things about characters and, like you said, the resources available and little things. At one point, you have a hawk that's injured and finding out what that looks like and the healing time, little things like that, that I noticed with your book, you do have a lot of details that add to the realisticness of the story. And I appreciated that. And especially reading something in my home state, this is such an odd, at times, unique area that there are those little things in writing about New Mexico, the location, the culture, the people, that people who live here will realize really quickly whether the person writing actually knows the area or not. So I appreciated that about yours, that you did take that time to research even down to the small details to make it feel like a really realistic setting and that the characters were interacting with it in a way that really struck me and caught my attention.
Well, so much of New Mexico is billed as some kind of resort land because we've got the ski mountains and we've got Taos and we've got Santa Fe. But I really wanted to write about rural New Mexico. So that's why I invented my little village and then filled it up with the things that I knew about from other little villages.
Like I said, I really appreciated that. I also really enjoyed the complexity of your characters, and I wanted to start there as far as digging a little bit deeper. As you mentioned in your overview, the main character, Beck Robertson, when the book first starts, she's in the middle of treatment for breast cancer, and then most of the book we're kind of seeing her deal with the outcomes and the fallout of that. So we have a lot of layers in her character. And even though her husband is not on the page as much, he's still a really fascinating character. And we see him both through Beck's eyes and their interactions. But you also get a pretty strong sense of just who he is and what both of their issues are and how those personal issues that they're struggling with really just kind of don't match up well with each other. And it makes it extra difficult for them to work through these situations because they're avoidant, they don't communicate well, and they're just each dealing with their own things that just seem to compound the overall problems in their relationships. So tell me first, how did you start developing these characters? What is your process for that?
Well, quite often I'm walking the dog. We do about an hour every morning, and I'm thinking about characters. There are times when I found myself in the middle of the woods and not knowing quite where I was, and I become dependent upon the dog to lead me home. So it's interesting. I've carried people around in my head, particularly women, because you have to, when you're writing about outside of your own gender, you have to make the investment to make sure that you're going to be authentic. But I'll carry a character around in my head for a couple of years, and then very often I'll start with a short story. And I'm pretty much a failed short story writer, really only attempt them so that I can get my name into Google somehow. But my short stories that really work suddenly start sprawling out and they become 10,000 words or 12,000 words. And I just keep working on who the character is and what they're doing and what motivates them. What do they fear? What is the secret that they would never tell anyone? And that's pretty much how I get to it. In Beck's case, the issue for her is that she creates a lot of conflict between her husband and herself because she's pushing him. She's pushing him. He's an unhappy man. She's going to get in there and she's going to fix the situation. So you have to start asking what happened to her in her past that created this behavior pattern. And I decided that it had to do with a pretty abusive father and a mother who was knuckled under to that father, but was actually virgin in her own right, and then a hard scrabble living on a Texas ranch. I had to start telling her backstory, and I chose to do that interspersed through the book, where what had happened to her as a child would partially illustrate, even if it's only in subtext, the experience that she's having at that moment as an adult. That's how I got into her. As far as his character, my blessed chaplain, I needed to have somebody who had a definitive need to serve and who understood that he didn't have all the right answers, but I also needed to put up barriers between him and his wife. And through my life, I've noticed a form of behavior among some males where, particularly in a marriage, where the man gets very, very impatient if anything goes wrong with the woman. They just basically become resistant to the fact that here's a person who is sick or hurt or troubled, and they just want it to be over with, you know? And that can go to an extreme, and I've known at least one person that couldn't accept physical imperfection in their spouse or their significant other. And that is truly the psychological defect that drives him. He can't handle the fact that she's had to undergo major surgery. And so he just is not physically capable of intimacy anymore, which is, I think, a truthful condition. It's rare, fortunately.
Well, but it really came off, for me as the reader, for his character especially, very believable. You present him in a way that we don't get a ton of his backstory. He's not, like I said, he's not on the page a lot. But right. I was really fascinated by him because there was a lot of depth, despite not getting a lot of time with him. And there were areas of the story where I felt very sympathetic to him and what he's dealing with, especially when he finds out Beck's basically like kind of let their life implode without telling him. It's like, oh yeah, that's not a fun conversation to have. So you do feel sympathy for him in some aspects, but then on other parts where you're just like, oh man, like, guy, come on, you've got to find a way to work through this, like, try harder. And you get frustrated with him, but in an understandable way, where I think most of us probably have met someone or had someone in our lives that you wish they could change some behavior or some aspect of themselves, but you kind of come to the realization at some point of like, they're not capable of making that change, at least not at that point in their life. And with Beck's husband, I felt that with him of like this dual sense of frustration and sympathy and, ah, come on, just get it together. But he can't.
Snap out of it.
Yeah.
By the final draft, character is very, very real to me. And the thing that comes to me is if you start thinking of him as a person, then, of course, you want to fix him, even though your job as an author is to provide tension and conflict. I find it highly ironic that he ends up being the person who can sit out in the boonies in Afghanistan and counsel people that are in terrible shape, fighting forces. And he provides that aid to them, and he understands it as his service. But he never seeks help himself, not really. He basically makes a token pass at it and blows it off. But you would think that he would understand, based upon his own mission, that he can't do this alone. He should, and he can't talk it out with Beck, that's for sure. So I found it highly ironic that this is the human being that I created.
Well, but again, like, that's so realistic. That's something in my life I could relate to of, you know, he has this kind of caretaker personality where, like you said, he feels called to serve others. He feels this need to help. And I think that's hard sometimes when you're that type of person to then accept that you also need help, that you can maybe do things for other people, but there are certain things that you can't do for yourself. Because that's such a different process of helping someone else through a difficult time and dealing with your own inner insecurities or fears or holdups, whatever it might be that someone's dealing with. It's so different, and it's so hard to admit and come to that understanding of I can't do it myself. Like, I need help just like everyone else. And I really related to him on that because I had to struggle through that with my own life of taking those steps to, you know, get into counseling and work through some struggles that I was having with anxiety and depression and relationship things and just, you know, trying to figure out where I was. That is really hard to do. And you kind of have to reach that point in your life where you're ready to make those admissions and accept that help. I felt like there was that level of frustration, like I said, of like wanting him to figure it out and fix things, but also like for me, just this really deep understanding of how hard that is and that it really can't be forced on someone. Yeah. They've got to come to that in their own time. And in this story, you know, time plays a big role because they're not there together physically most of the time with each other. And he's in a dangerous environment where there's always this sense of you don't know what's coming next. And I don't want to give too much away from the book, but time is definitely a factor here. And, you know, if you don't hit that point when other people need you to hit that point, it makes it difficult. And we have a little bit of that on Beck's side as well, of her working through not only her physical scars and her acceptance of that, but then dealing with the emotional trauma that she's dealing with in her relationship. And she's working through it on a much different timetable than her husband was. And we have a lot of factors that come into play once she moves out to the cabin in New Mexico. So I wanted to ask you a little bit more as far as the other characters that she meets. And you mentioned in your description, the villagers are a little out there at times. They're fun and interesting characters. And then we also have the veterans that come into play as this veteran center is being constructed on her land. This was a fun book to read for me because my students and I are getting ready to start our narrative unit. And I've been working through lesson plans on character and characterization and character development. This isn't quite right for ninth graders, but if I could, this would have been really great for them to study the characters in your book because there's so many good examples I was noticing as I was going through and working on my lesson plans. But tell me about some of these secondary characters that come into play and how they interact with Beck and her process of surviving everything she's facing and going through.
I'll tell you a funny story to begin with. I participate in what's called the Taos Masterclass, where every year or so I'll take a book and sit down with six people and we dissected each other's work and then we talk hard about what's working with the book, where it could go, what the author's intentions are. And the guy that runs that's named John Dufresne, and you should look him up because he's just a marvelous writer. And he teaches in Florida. So I'm sitting in the Drury in Santa Fe, which has this cocktail bar up on the top deck. And John and I are talking for an hour, which tends to turn into 3 hours as part of the course. And I'm describing the basic concept of this book. And he says, well, you've got a lot of misery in here, so you're going to need something that is going to give your readers a break, a breather as you're going along. So I went to I keep a little notebook, and if I am not actively writing on something, I will just make little portraits or little sketches, or I'll steal something. I'll pick out a waiter that we saw in Santa Fe and imagine a life behind his, hi, I'm Willard, and I'm going to be your server today. So I started mining out people like that. I met somebody who was sous-chefing in an Angel Fire restaurant here. Met him in the bar named Zeb's. After the restaurant closed, the entire staff came down, and that's evidently what they do on Friday nights, is drink until the bar closes. So she turned out to be my chef in the village because Beck needed somebody to talk to. For one thing, it was one of the ways that I was using antagonist character in order to provide insight to the reader of what Beck was going through. She could talk about, you'll remember that Beck uses the Wi-Fi in the cafe in order to talk to her husband in Afghanistan. So it gave me a setting, it gave me a place, it gave me a person that she could interact with while she was in there. And it actually leads partially to the redemptive parts of the book. I consider it a redemptive book because my chaplain, he may have a shocking ending, but he's doing exactly what he wants to do when it happens. And Beck has lost nearly everything out of her adult life, but she's effectively built an extended family. And that's what the characters are in there for.
I really like that. And I think that's an important concept that you mentioned there, that yes, there is a lot of struggle and darkness and hard things in this book, but you don't keep it all on that level. We have the fun, interesting characters to lighten it up here and there. And overall, like, you're working toward this sense of getting through something really difficult. We have some of the veterans who are working at the center, and we don't get as much of their personal stories and their outcomes, but we see them making their progress as they work through. We see, even in the town itself, you have some subplots in there of them trying to make some improvements and bring new activity and life to this small town that struggled a bit. And then we see that, as you mentioned, in the main characters, which are the more obvious plots with change and then the redemption there. But really, you weave that throughout all the aspects and layers of the book. And that was something that, as we go through some of those heavier chapters in the book, that I found as a reader were very helpful to give me that emotional and psychological break when I needed it. So I could you know, balance that out and keep reading and keep wanting to move forward with the characters to find out what was going to happen. Because even though there is a lot of struggle in there, like, I felt that we were coming toward something different, that we were working toward a goal that wasn't going to leave me as the reader just like, oh man, that was rough.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't trying to write crime and punishment, you know. I didn't have an axe murderer who wishes he'd murdered himself instead. I wanted something that basically shows that people are survivors, even if life is not turning out the way that they wanted it to. I think that is true of nearly all of us in minor ways all over the place. But I think that when you highlight it through fiction, you have to make some of the crises catastrophic in order to really, really provide a playing field where the story is important enough to be told.
I think so, too. And I think you accomplished that well here. I did want to ask, I don't want to give away anything about the ending, but I was curious, is there any continuation of this story at some point that you've thought of, or does the ending stay as it is?
Well, this is an excellent question from a fellow author, someone who's got a lot more books than I do. One of the things I noticed about your work is that you do series. You fall in love with characters, and you move them into book two, and you move them into book three. And you're fearless about genre hopping, which means that you feel you can write a character into any kind of situation that you want. If you're asking if I'm going to write a sequel for this book, probably not. And did I leave the ending not sharply defined on purpose? And yes, I did. My entire extended family are huge Harry Potter fans, but I think that one of the worst mistakes that J.K. made, and one of the worst mistakes that the director made, was giving us the epilogue at the very end where it ties it up nicely into a bow, because it really implies the end of the struggle. It means we can all go out and sing happy ending, happy ending. Whereas Beck's not through. I mean, life doesn't stop at the end of the book. Even in memoirs, it's something that we still have to go on and work on. So I could have done another couple of chapters that showed her struggling with problems, but I don't think she's going to be out of the woods for a long, long time, if she is ever out of the woods. What she does have is she's got a redemption in the extended family that I mentioned earlier. You know, she's got people she can turn to. You'll remember in the first initial forays into the village in New Mexico, she's sharply resisting getting involved with people. She wants a life of seclusion. She had the life where she was forced into being the minister's wife in a megachurch, and she doesn't want that anymore. She doesn't see it as her role in life. And yet people keep bringing her their problems or their quandaries, or she sees them basically making poor choices, which is also amusing since she makes several poor choices. But by the end of the book, you know, she's realizing that she's got a stake in these people and they've got a stake in her life.
I like that. And I actually really enjoyed the ending as it was, but I figured that would be a question readers might want to pose to you. I tend to be a fan of, especially in film, the more open endings of, you know, you kind of take it with you as you go and figure out what you think happens next and let that play out in your own mind. So I really enjoyed that, but I was curious what else was in the works. And on that line, what are you working on now if you have a project going on? And what might we keep an eye out for in the future with you?
Well, I have a book that I'm currently editing with the publisher. It'll come out, I believe, if we can agree on some key points, from the same publisher that put out and Throw Away the Skins, which is Fomite, which is an indie press out of Vermont. And this book is way outside of their genre normally. They like it because they describe it as a morality play, which I suppose it is. It's basically a noir novel about an East LA pawnbroker. And if we're successful, we'll have it out in February, and I'll start the marketing process, and I'll start entering contests with it. Contests have been very nice to me as an author. I have not done poorly. I've done really well on a couple of the books. And it's a way for me to market. It's a way for me to get my foot in the door when I want to get a reading in Albuquerque in one of the bookstores, something like that. So that'll be the first real product that I've had since the pandemic. And we'll have to see how it goes.
Well, good.
But I've written the whole thing. It may sound a little Raymond Chandler-y, my narrator, but I've written the structure more on a picaresque level, because when I was starting the book, I was rereading Don Quixote, which is not only one of the first giant great books in literature, but it is a total picaresque novel.
Well, I am interested to get back in contact with you about that and hopefully get a chance to read it and have you back on the show. That sounds really fascinating.
Yeah, I've got a couple of other projects that are in the wind also. I'm one of those authors who, unfortunately, takes a long time to get a book out, but then I work on multiple books at the same time with overlaps so that I don't bore myself or get lost in the process. I've got one book that's coming up to finish, and I've got one book I'm starting, that type of thing. So it keeps it fresh and keeps it alive for me.
Oh, good. Well, and we are already out of time. Oh. That went by really quickly, but... tell people where they can find you online so they can stay up to date on what you're doing.
Okay. Well, I let my website die. basically, they did a major upgrade on the some of the underpinning software. My entire site blew up. And unfortunately, I've been much more interested in writing rather than feeding the machine. But if people want to get a hold of me, Facebook's the easiest way. I'm also on Threads, and you should look for Scott Archer Jones.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And I just wanted to remind our listeners that the book is called And Throw Away the Skins by Scott Archer Jones, and that's available on Amazon. And I hope people take a minute to check it out and dive into Beck Robertson's life and the struggles that she's facing. I think people will really enjoy it.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to get to talk about yourself, or at least about your work. I'm glad to be able to share some of the investment I've made in the book.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.